You're listening to the Melrose Place podcast, where we rewatch, recap, and analyze every episode of the hit 90s TV series, Melrose Place.
My name's Dan Hill.
And I'm Jenny Hill.
Let's get started, folks. Season 3, Episode 11, The Day of Wine and Vodka. Air date November 21st, 1994. It's Thanksgiving, y'all.
Thanksgiving, so much to be thankful for.
Yes.
And I'm thankful that this episode is heating up already because our cold open is a confrontation between Joe and Allison.
Pregnant-ass Joe comes strolling down the stairs and catches Allison. They're both about to, I guess, going out. And Allison is all up in Joe's face like, Joe, hey, Joe, are you not talking to me?
And it's like, Allison, duh, she's not talking to you.
Yeah, fuck no.
You know, it's under her perspective. It's because of you, she basically lost custody of her unborn baby. So Joe tries to play it off and she's like, look, we all have problems. I'm going to worry about mine. You're going to worry about yours. And Allison is like, well, Joe, I care about you. Don't you know that? And then that's when Joe really lays into her.
She's like, I told everyone you are my best friend.
The one you set your watch by. And you know what? I can't trust you anymore. You weren't there for me, and I don't want you to be my baby's godmother.
And she's talking about her actions at court, and she's like, you couldn't walk and chew gum at the same time.
That's a very 90s expression.
Is it?
I feel like it.
I mean, yeah, I haven't heard that in a decade.
Yeah,
so.
I heard that a lot back then.
Do you think...
People told me that a lot.
I heard kick ass and chew bubble gum.
What?
They're like, I'm here to kick ass and chew bubble gum, and I'm all out of bubble gum.
I've never heard that before.
Really?
I've heard you can't walk and chew gum at the same time.
No, that's definitely a saying. Like, I'm here to kick ass and chew bubble gum, all out of bubble gum.
So is that from a dumb movie?
Probably.
Yeah.
It probably is. But do you think that as a adult, like, the silent treatment is all right? Like, just someone's talking to you and you're just like, nose in the air, like, I will not speak to that person.
Well, no. I mean, I think that you'd have to be like to preface it by saying, look, I don't think we should talk anymore.
Yeah.
And then just kind of keep to yourself.
Right.
I mean, I think that's a pretty adult thing to do as opposed to like having an all out drag out fight.
I wouldn't just walk past them and be like, I am not speaking. I would just say like, don't talk to me. We're not friends anymore. This friendship is over.
Yeah, exactly. But, and pretty much what Joe did.
Yeah. This friendship is a wrap.
So that then brings us to our opening credits.
And did you say that Joe was like, you're not my kid's godmother?
Oh, I said it.
Oh, all right.
I said it, Dan.
Sorry. So we hit the opening credits. We see that runner again, not using the very nice Beverly Hills sidewalk.
Yeah, a lot of establishing and using the street shots here. So like skyscrapers, we see the Hollywood sign.
Wacky guy with the shirt open walking a chihuahua.
Yeah, I mean, and these are, again, like footage that they like to use over and over again.
Yeah.
We've seen these shots a lot.
Amanda has asked us to look out for... Apparently, there's a hospital shot and a guy walking towards the hospital. And I've never noticed that. But apparently, like, he's always at different lengths up to the hospital. Haven't caught him yet, though.
We always see the car parked like an asshole in front of Wilshire Memorial. We've seen that at least three times.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll definitely look out for the dude walking in front of the hospital.
So we go to Billy's apartment, and he, you know, he's pulling Susan back into bed. Susan's like, I got to go to work. And they always show Susan's nipples.
What?
They always put her braless. They must like it. Because this has happened several times.
I forgot. You are like...
I'm nipple watch.
You're on the underwear scene.
Nipple and crotch watch.
Yeah.
Remember? Reed jumped up in the white crusty boxers on the counter. Almost saw his balls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess I didn't notice that. But they're talking and we find out that next Thursday is Thanksgiving.
Right.
And they're planning to spend all day in bed together the next opportunity that they get. And then that's when Susan is like, well, I have a good idea. Let's host a Thanksgiving dinner and it'll give us an opportunity to make peace with our friends and neighbors, especially one. And of course, she's referring to Allison.
And then she leaps up and she's like, sweet, I get to use my French words now. And she's like, I could make a puedo le pues parfait du fagot a butter sola grares.
Yeah, and of course, me and Dan are like, shut the F up. And even, yeah. I'm sorry, Billy was like, how about you just do yams and turkey?
Turkey, yams, please.
And for once, I'm like, Billy, I'm on your side.
And can you cut my turkey up in little squares so I don't choke?
But then chew it up for me, too, and spit it in my mouth like a baby bird.
Like a mama bird would for her bird children.
So, yeah, Billy's like, let's keep it traditional. So they decide that they're going to invite Allison and see what happens.
And Billy's like, you invite her though, because I don't want to.
Yeah. So next up, we have Jane knocking on Sydney's door, which is so weird. Yeah. These two have the strangest relationship.
They really do.
It's so weird. So if you remember, I think the last interaction they had was Jane basically accusing Sydney of paying Jake back in sex in order to be on her side.
You little bitch.
Yeah, I think that's that was verbatim what she said.
You fucking bitch.
And now Jane's like, hi, Sydney. I'm going to Chicago to our parents for Thanksgiving, and I really think you should go with me.
And Sydney's like, are you nuts? Dad got me put in a mental institution on my turf. I don't know what he's capable of on his.
Yeah, which she has a really good point.
Yeah, and hell no.
Jane
Count. They put me in a loony bin, like, sis.
Literally, I almost got raped by a freaking weird janitor.
Yeah, like, I'm not eating pumpkin pie with y'all.
No, it's done.
Plus, I'm a server.
Yeah,
I can't buy a plane ticket.
And you think I can get off? Like, I can get off work? This close to, it's next Thursday.
Hell no.
Anyway, Jane's like, well, you seem to have found happiness. And I just think that sooner or later, you got to reconcile with the family. You might as well do it sooner. And Sydney's like, I have no plans to reconcile and nor do I have to.
Yeah. She's like, I don't plan on talking to them ever again.
And I got to side with Sydney here. Like,
seriously, guys, if your family puts you in a loony bin and you're not loony, you don't have any reason to speak with them ever again.
And, okay, Sydney's not an angel. I think we can all agree on that point.
No.
But she's kind of turned a corner here. She's trying to get her life right. I think being around Jane and Chris, bad move.
Yeah.
So I think she made a good call here.
Right. Now we head over to, I guess this is an adoption agent.
Yeah.
That Michael and Kimberly are speaking with. And we come into them, come at them mid-conversation where the agent is saying that they would have to pay for all of the birth mother's expenses up front. And then even after they do that, the birth mother can still be like, oh, I'm keeping this baby. And no refunds.
And you know what? This is where I see an opportunity.
Yeah.
Dan, how much did we spend on giving birth to Moxie?
That's my note. I was like, why doesn't everyone just do this?
Yeah, I'd be like, hi, would you like to adopt my child? Oh, great. My insurance really sucks, so it looks like you're going to have to foot the bill.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, after I saw my little angel's face, I just can't give her up.
I'm going to keep this
Hey,
one.
But I'll send you that bill for $13,000 yeah. for the delivery.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Bye. Deuces. Yeah, so and that's crazy.
And it's anywhere between $2,500 and $100,000.
That's a really big swath of numbers.
Right. And then, so Michael, he doesn't even try.
it's like without missing a beat, he's like, well,
I guess that's that.
We're young, honey. We'll figure it out.
Yeah. He's like, ooh, remember those loans? Yeah. And plus I owe Jake like 10 bucks. So we can't do this. Bye.
And of course we see Kimberly is noticeably upset about this. But she's determined, and I think we're going to see a little bit more of Kimberly and her determined, I'm going to get what I want.
Right.
This.
And look, not everybody's perfect. I mean, there are guys out there who don't want to have kids, and they're with women who do want to have kids. And if they were to find out that, like, their wife or girlfriend or whatever can't have kids, I'm not saying they would be happy, but I'm saying they could at least show a little bit of, like, you know what? I don't
like
want kids.
Feign yeah, a little bit of, like, oh, that's
I'm sorry, sweetheart. Like, that sucks.
But we're talking about Michael Mancini here, Dan.
Yeah, there's not a
totally different ball
he
game.
He is out for number one, and that's it.
So next scene, we are with Allison and her new beau, Zach, and they're having a lunch. And did you notice that bottle of Chardonnay on the table?
No, I couldn't stop staring at his fucking flavor saver.
I couldn't stop getting lost in his dreamy eyes.
He is so grimy.
I don't know. I kind of like him, guys.
All his knuckle rings and
okay,
shit.
Okay, I do have a note about that.
Get the fuck
what
out of here.
What is that about? What is that yeah. about?
What are you, like a magician?
No, I feel like...
that's some shit. It's like Chris Angel. Mind freak.
I am the mind freak.
It's like only magicians like wizards.
No, Dan, he really does have like a very
he's the
strong
mind freak
vibe. Like, so much.
Who wears that many man rings? I used to wear...
like a vampire would.
Yeah. Look,
vampire.
When I was not married, when I was in college and like high school and stuff, I wore rings. I had rings.
Yeah, not like that.
Exactly. I had a spinner ring. Remember that one?
Yeah. I think I lost it in Europe, actually.
Yeah, dick. I had an index finger ring. That was cool.
Okay, no.
And I had a middle finger ring on the other hand. Two rings.
Man, that's questionable.
But this guy has like 9 rings.
It's a lot.
We should have counted. What kind of podcast
and,
is this?
And you know what? They were like very ornate. Like they were like skulls and like roses around.
Yeah, just like bottle openers.
Yeah. So anyway, they're at lunch.
I think he had Allison's old engagement ring on there. the shrapnel.
And they're talking, and Allison comes right out with it, and she's like, do you think I have a drinking problem? Why the F would you ask that to Zach?
Yeah, of course he's going to be like, nah, babe, take the shot.
Can we do like 5 more shots of Jaeger right now?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, where is this coming from? Your friend Joe? Oh, let me guess. The verdict didn't go in her favor with her little court case.
And then Allison's like, no, Amanda said something too, and he's like, oh, you mean Amanda Woodward, who lives at blah, blah, blah Melrose Place, who is dating Peter Burns, whose boyfriend blew up on a boat. My note was, how does he know all of this? Like, I'm sure Allison has privied him to some information, yeah. But damn, he knows like
he
everything.
He knows the backstory and he can recall it really easily. And then he kind of shifts focus and is like, you know what, Allison, you got to focus on yourself. What do you need in life? Like, what do you want? And she says,
well, I need a car.
yeah, I tried to sell my car a couple of months back and nobody wanted to buy it. And then it's like, what about that Jeep Steve gave you?
Yeah, dumbass. Why'd you give that away? Should have kept that.
But anyway, she's like, yeah, I really want a car. So he's like, well, let's go get you a car.
He's such an enabler.
He really is.
He's an apologist. He's just like, whatever. It's you versus everybody else. You're perfect. You're great. Let's go get a car. It's weird.
I'm a party girl.
Yeah, you're my party girl. Here, try on one of my rings.
So, next scene, we're at D&D, where Bruce is actually making an appearance into Amanda's office.
And what about having a heart attack means you have a limp? He came back with a limp. I'm like, did you hurt your leg, too? We're probably dancing like that.
I think it was a strenuous dancing. Yeah.
He's like, I had a heart attack, and I pulled my hammy. Did you see those moves?
Very jerky.
Did you see me out there?
And so apparently news of the heart attack leaked to the press. D&D stock is plummeting, and somebody has already bought a huge chunk of the stock, and he is convinced that somebody deliberately linked all of this information, and now D&D is ripe for a takeover.
Bruce is broken, guys.
And I'm just like, is D&D that big of a deal that like they're getting write-ups and like all these publications and people are like, oh yeah, the main like, yeah. I don't even know, what's Bruce's title? Like he's
president.
I don't know.
But like, do you know the ad agency that does like Coca-Cola ads?
No, I have no.
I'm sure that's a big account. Like this, they act like this is fucking like a law firm.
No, they act like it's something that's like Google,
like Amazon,
if Apple somehow like got some change in leadership and it was all over the presses.
Who's watching your stock and like
it,
that?
Yeah, I don't know. It just seemed a little weird, and it's like, yeah, people get sick, and the president had a heart attack. That doesn't mean that like, oh God, mm-hmm. the business is crumbling.
Steve Jobs died, yo.
And Apple's still top of its game.
Yeah, man. So Bruce is like, every day I'm out of the office, the stock falls. So that's why I'm here. And Amanda's like, look, Bruce, you need to take it easy. I can see you're limping. And you didn't bring your glasses.
You still got those contacts in.
Yeah.
You just need to go take the day off. He's like, okay, I'll be back this afternoon. Yep, doctor's orders, Bruce. Like, you really got to follow what your doctors are saying.
And he's just like, I know someone's after me. But thanks, Amanda.
Yeah, so as soon as Bruce exits her office, the first move is to pick up the phone and call Peter.
And she's like, she realizes, Peter tells her that they're the real stock buyers.
Yeah, so she's just like, Bruce told me that someone bought up all of the stock, and then Peter's just like, oh, don't worry, Amanda. It's us.
That's us.
And she's like, what are you talking about? Well, our investment group, of course. We're buying up D&D stock.
Peter's the type of motherfucker that, like, you don't get surprised if he opens up his closet and there's, like, seven bodies in there.
I know.
You know? If that's where this story goes, I'd be like, I knew it.
He is Lucifer.
They're just like on hangers. Or like someone takes an axe to his wall, and behind the wall is like a gang of children, like making stuff. I'd believe it.
So
Allison bought a new car.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Dun, 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 dun. They're driving in a convertible. Zach immediately gets on Allison's car phone and like places a call to Santa Barbara, and he's just like, hello, Santa Barbara, can I have a hotel room, please?
So apparently this is midweek, and they are just doing this on her lunch break, and she's like, no, Zach, I have to go back to work, and he's like, I have a meeting in Santa Barbara tomorrow, and we might as well go up there tonight and have some fun and enjoy your nice little car. This is phase one of your new life.
Yeah. And this is total bullshit to anyone who's ever bought a car. You cannot do that shit on lunch.
No, it's like a 9-hour process.
I don't care if you have if you're paying it all cash, you're going to be there for 3 hours.
Yeah, minimum.
Just signing stuff. Would you like protection on this? Would you like this on
this?
Oh,
let me go talk to my revenue person. Hold on 1 second.
Hey, this is Jim. Would you like protection on your glass? Go to hell. It just takes way too long. You cannot do that on your lunch.
Yeah. And she keeps saying, Zach, I can't. And Zach says, I hate those words. Come on, we'll go there. We'll drive back tonight. Not a big deal. You can blow off the rest of work. You said that your meeting was canceled. Do you need to be there? And she's like, no. Well, who cares? You're blowing it off and we're going. So,
and she likes it.
Yeah, they agree. They go up to Santa Barbara. They have this like,
it's like a cabin.
Yeah, it's like more. It's not like a hotel room. It's like there's a fire.
Definitely not a hotel room because there's a fucking fireplace in there. You cannot set fire. I don't care what 90s moment you're in. I don't know of any hotel you can put a freaking fire.
Maybe
on.
They have like a villa, like a cabin as part of their property, but they're in the hotel room and they're enjoying their evening. They're drinking. Things are good.
And they say they love each other.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Allison's like, Zach, I've never been this happy in my whole life.
What do you mean?
I feel like I'm really being myself and I owe a lot of that to you.
She's been happy like this. I can count. I don't know. I've just met the girl. And I can count 4 times she's been happier.
Anytime she gets in a relationship with anybody, she's like, oh
Steve,
my gosh.
Keith.
I'm just so... Billy.
Yeah.
I'm so happy with you. Oh, whatever you say, I'll do. She like basically lets them push her around.
Steve, Keith, Billy, the dude she had a one-night stand with. She loved all of them.
Yeah. So then, so like, I love you too. And then it's like, oh, it's on. So
and Zach's like, buckle up, baby. This is going to be a long one.
He says, put another log on the fire. So Allison goes over, picks up the log, puts it on the fire, turns around, starts unbuttoning her blouse. And then freaking Zach passed out.
Zach's like dead. I thought that was going to be the story. Like, he died. He's on too much drugs. Like, I thought he was like fucked up on something. I was like, Zach? Well, Zach?
He's gone. So Allison's just kind of like, oh, well. And they cut to the next scene.
Head on over to Shooters. This guy comes in and he's like, I'm looking for Jake Hansen.
Jake's then, behind the bar. He's like, yeah, who's asking?
He's like, you're looking at him. Who says that?
Who are you? And the guy's like, yeah, just call me a friend.
Just think about that, guys. If you're at work and someone comes into your work and says, I'm looking for so-and-so, can you really say, yeah, you're looking at him without getting in trouble? Like, I would get in trouble, maybe.
He owns the bar, Dan.
Yeah, but
who
still,
is he going to get in trouble with?
I don't know. Like, I feel like that's not something you say anymore.
I think you could say that. Like, you could say it like this. You're looking at him.
But who says that, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Jake. Probably a lot of people say that.
You think?
Yeah.
Have you ever walked into a place looking for somebody and they respond, you're looking at him?
Not to my recollection, but maybe that's happened in my life experience. Anyway... So the guy's like, you know, kind of walking around. He's breathing it in. He's like, yeah, nice place you got here, huh?
And then
solid business.
He introduces himself as a friend.
Yeah.
I'm a friend. Okay.
Solid business, top shelf liquor. How do you like to keep it that way? And of course, it's like, okay, yeah, you're part of some like organized gang people,
some like mob syndicate.
Yeah, and he's like, let's just say we're good Samaritans. We make sure that your windows don't get broken, that deliveries arrive on time, that, you know, the place doesn't get broken into.
And then Jake sort of takes him around the corner. He's like, all right, so what's that going to run me? And he responds, $1,000 a month.
So, of course, to that, Jake is like, gets him in a chokehold, like up against the wall. He's like, I'm not giving you a quarter to pay your parking meter.
Now get out of here. And Mr. Black, that's what his name is played by Al Sapienza. And he's known for, he's working. Hmm. He's doing some good stuff. He's on House of Cards, The Sopranos. He's on that new Jack Ryan that's going to be on Amazon. Hasn't even come out yet with John Krasinski. Mm-hmm. And he was on Bates Motel.
Mm.
But he's just your typical, he looks crimey.
Yeah, he's like organized mob dude.
He's your Italian crime guy.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure they're just like, go and get all the Italian crime guys. And they're all just in a file. Just pull the name out.
That's the guy. So Sydney overhears this exchange and she's like, oh, Jake, you better do what they say. I mean, I used to work with that guy when I was with Lauren and he means business.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how does she...
She banged him.
And I'm kind of like, in what capacity?
She probably hit it.
I don't know. Maybe. So Jake is not having this. He's like, no, we're not paying anybody. Like, I dare him to come back, whatever.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. You're on break.
So it's the next morning. We're back at this hotel room with Zach and Allison. And Allison wakes up in a panic. She has a meeting in half an hour.
Of course.
She's in Santa Barbara, of course, which
is impossible
to get down to LA in the morning.
And Zach says, when's the last time you had a mental health day?
Try yesterday. Remember when I didn't go back to work?
Yeah, this guy doesn't give a shit about Allison, and he just wants to sleep. He just wants to sleep more.
He's like, so if you miss the meeting, is it with the client? No. Will it jeopardize your account with a client? No. Then who cares? You don't need to be there.
Yeah, there's nothing more to your work than...
keeping your clients happy. And you know what? Your work's got to recognize that. And if they don't, I mean... you're a good person. You need to take a day off once in a while.
So Allison starts to believe this. And then Zach calls D&D by heart.
I did not notice that, but you are totally right. He just picks it up.
He picks it up.
Like, how do you know D&D?
He just does.
Dan, maybe in the Melrose Place universe, D&D is like... as big as Apple.
Well, can you call Apple right now?
I mean, 1-800-APPLE? I don't know.
Like, he just calls D&D by heart.
Yeah, and then he's like, get me Amanda Woodward, please. It's just like, what? Allison jumps on the line and talks to Amanda's assistant, I guess.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, sorry, Bob. I'm coming down with the flu, so I'm not going to be able to come in today, but I'll definitely be there for the meeting this afternoon.
Yeah, and this doesn't make any damn sense. If you have the flu, you're not getting over it in a morning.
So you're going to jeopardize the health of your coworkers and the client by coming to the meeting sick?
Yeah, no. I hate when people do this shit. I think I've said this before on the podcast, but if you really are sick, stay at home. Take the day off. Mm-hmm. Do not come in to work sick. You're going to get everybody else sick.
Yeah.
And I know I'm saying this from a stance where I work at a place where like there's sick days and but some people aren't allowed. They don't have that sort of luxury. I mm-hmm. get it. But fuck, man. It's a way to spread diseases. That might be my lesson today. Stay home.
Hey, that's a good lesson.
Yeah.
So Zach is like, well, not a full mental health day, but it's a start.
It's a start. So now we are at lunch. And is this Susan's work? It's the same shot. It's the shot of it's lunch with Matt and... And Matt's parents and Jeffrey. But the exterior shot, I feel like it's when Susan came out and hung out with Billy and then got in the car through mm-hmm. the driver's seat.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I remember. I don't know. I did not recognize that. But Jeffrey and Matt's parents are getting on like a house on fire. They're having a nice little time.
Mm-hmm.
They're laughing. They're telling stories and... it's getting to the end of their time together, and
Matt's gotta go. Jeffrey offers to go get the car with the valet or whatever. So Matt and his parents have a second to talk while Jeffrey's not around, and Matt's like, can I bring my boyfriend to dinner for Thanksgiving, please?
And his parents are like, sure, he's a very nice young man. We'd love to have you both, of course.
So that's great. It's like, okay, sweet, awesome. Now we go to the doctor's. Kimberly's there.
Yeah, no Michael this time, okay? So I think this is a fertility doctor.
Yeah, and this, we finally get a glimpse of the crow, Kimberly.
Yeah, so Kimberly,
she's coming back around.
She is talking to the doctor and she's like, I've read everything on fertility and I'm seeing that if there are some like cryogenic things, if we do some freezing and if we do this, and the doctor starts talking over her.
You can't carry a fetus.
And she says, please don't interrupt me. Yikes. And then she like keeps going on. The way that she delivers these lines, she cuts like a knife. It's like her eyes are daggers and her words are just like sharp, like stabs at your soul. Mm-hmm. She
basically cannot carry a fetus regardless of technological advancements in child carrying birth.
And areas. So yes.
Things.
That's the technical term for
the
it.
Birthy things.
The things that you need to have a baby with.
No can do.
So the doctor's like, look, Kimberly, I want you to see one of my friends. I think you could really benefit by meeting with her. And Kimberly's like, let me guess, your friend's a some kind of a shrink, right? Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, yes, she is. You know what, doctor? I wonder if you have any other friends. Any friends that could get me a black market baby?
It's like, whoa, we really jumped ahead here.
That is crazy. And I mean,
you really want to help me, doctor? I need a black market baby.
Stat! Now!
Like, oh, let me just take you in the other room where we do black market deals.
Well, yes, exactly. But thankfully,
this escalated quickly.
Yeah, and this doctor reacted, I think, how like people would in the real world. He was like, Kimberly, coming from you, this is so unscrupulous and depraved, and I am just shocked that you would even bring this up. This is unprofessional and insulting to me that you think that I would even have play a role in black market babies. Absolutely not.
This reminds me of when I was in freshman year of college. We went to New York on a mission to get fake IDs. And we would go into these head shops that sell like glass bongs and bowls and like messed up t-shirts with like shitty sayings on them. And then you go to the back and you're like, hey, do you guys sell IDs? And they would look at you and say, no. And then you look at them the same way and you say, do you guys sell IDs? And then they would slide you this book of like all these fake IDs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you gotta ask twice.
That's what she didn't do.
That's what she didn't do.
She should have asked the black market baby thing twice.
Yeah. So,
well,
next time.
Yeah. So on the way out of this office, she's leaving through the waiting room, and coincidentally, Joe is there for a checkup.
And Kimberly's pissed. She's like about to just leave, crying, pissed off, and Joe kind of sort of changes her tune.
Yeah, she's like, oh, Kimberly, hi. Yeah, how are you? Like, what's going on? And I mean, the last time I talked to you, you said you might be pregnant. What's up? And she's like, no, not pregnant, but I'm still trying. And then she asked Joe, hey, but Joe, what's going on with you? You don't look so good. And Joe says, well, actually,
I can't leave the hospital
without my baby. My freaking Carters have custody. My life is in shambles. I hate everything.
And Kimberly sort of lights up here. The wheels are turning. So Allison, she pulls up to this meeting that she raced back from Santa Barbara to. When her new car, you can hear the like heavy metal, like the shitty heavy metal, like me.
And the car like screeches up. It's like, and then she just jumps out of the car like, hey guys, I'm here. And
Billy and Amanda are just like scoffing at her.
So they're just like waiting in the valet area, presumably for Allison to get there. And they both comment on her new car. And Amanda is like, Allison, if I found out that you took the day off to buy this car, so help me God, you are fired.
And Billy walks up to the car, puts his hands all up on it, and he's like, you bought this? Oh my God.
How are you going to afford this? And then he's like,
shut the fuck up.
Actually, Amanda, I don't think she bought the car today. She bought it yesterday and then went on a drive and then had a night of partying and then had to sleep it off.
Say, thanks a lot, Sherlock Holmes. Like, you fucking narc. Like, get out of here. Billy, you fucking jerk. Like, why do you give a shit?
Yeah, exactly. Live your life. Go be with Susan, you stupid asshole.
And Allison gives it right back to him. Like, she's like, Amanda, back off. No one's wrong. Like, you didn't have to take the day or change your schedule at all. I'm here. This is my client.
And then
Fuck off.
Amanda is like, well, actually, Allison, Billy's theory really does seem to be the correct one. After all, you are wearing the same clothes that you wore yesterday. Which was like, oh, that's not a good sign.
But still, she can be like, dude, I'm here.
Who cares?
Yeah, who gives a shit?
So it's later in the afternoon, and Susan returns home to Billy's apartment, and she says, yeah, you want to go see a movie together? I haven't been to a movie in so long. And Billy's like, no, why don't you just go?
And he's really broken up about
yeah,
this.
Yeah, and I'm like, you just want her to go to a movie by herself? That's not cool. And she's like, I'm not going to go to a movie by myself.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Okay, I know what you're going to say.
Going to the movies by yourself is cool, and it is okay.
Okay. Coming from you, Dan, Dan is the type of person, if given the opportunity, he would go to a movie theater.
Every day.
Like 3 to 5 times a week. And there are many times when we will watch a movie at home and he will go to the movie theater and buy, you know, $14 popcorn just to have the experience of being at a movie theater.
Guys, I love the cinema.
So, yeah, there have been times where it's like, number one, now that we have a kid, I can't do anything. So Dan will go off and see movies by himself will get to a point where it's like, I can't see another midnight showing of freaking G.I. Joe.
G.I. Joe?
I'm not doing it.
You mean the Avengers?
All of it. So, I think you're a special case, Dan.
Going to the movies by yourself is enjoyable. Because when you go with someone, yes, you're watching the movie together, but are you? You're sort of watching the movie by yourself. Next to somebody you like.
The next time you try to drag me to something, I'm going to quote you on that.
All right. I go by myself all the time.
Oh, stop.
Susan, nut up.
So, like you were saying, Billy is kind of broken up about this, and he's like, you know, it's just Allison. I'm just thinking about her.
She's out of control. She's sabotaging herself.
She just bought a car that she can't afford, and now
Billy know that?
Well, Billy was engaged to her up until about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, true.
And then he's like, I just, you know, if she showed up to lunch today looking like hell, and you know, her work affects me. If she messes up at work, I'm in hot water too.
No, you're not, because you're a little tattletale. You'll just blame her.
So Billy's like, look, is she coming to Thanksgiving or what? And that's when Susan says, you know, she hasn't responded to me, Billy. And I think, honestly, you need to be the one that asks her about it.
And if you want her to come, she's not coming alone. Let's invite her little boy toy. And Billy's like, oh, Zach, I hate him. And she's like, well, you can't have her come here and it'd be 2-on-1.
My feeling is life is too short. Why are you trying to salvage this stupid friendship?
Yeah.
You have irrevocably burned that bridge.
Like, everyone gets along at Melrose Place without Matt.
Just take a page out of Matt's book, okay?
Like, just pretend that Allison is Matt.
Like, why?
No one hangs out with Matt.
Why ruin your Thanksgiving by some, like, feel that you are obligated to invite two people you necessarily don't want to be with.
And I don't care who you are. Thanksgiving with Billy sucks. Especially if it's just Billy and his girlfriend.
Okay, so
that's the worst. That would be the worst Thanksgiving. Why isn't Allison going to Thanksgiving with her sister? That's the bigger question.
No, that's a great question, actually. She should go to San Francisco.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, we go over to Shooters, where Jake is taking out the trash. And of course, he's got a little friend waiting for him at the back door in the alley.
Jake is too hands-on manager.
You know, I was thinking about that too. I get it. He's a working man. He's the kind of blue collar, roll your sleeves up kind of a guy.
Jake's like a busser.
Doing those menial jobs of like taking out the trash, mopping the floors.
Let someone else do that.
Yeah, you have staff.
He's tending bar. Like, you should like just be in the back having lunch.
So
cutting checks.
Our friend Mr. Black is there, and he's like, "So what, Jake? You think about my offer? What are you thinking? You want to pay me $1,000?"
Jake says, "You're not getting a dime."
So out of nowhere, on cue, an actual
a freaking barrel
trash can attacks Jake.
Yeah. It's a drum barrel.
All you see is Jake facing Mr. Black, the guy he's talking to, and he is just blindsided by a freaking trash barrel that just hits him on the side of the head.
And there is so much trash outside of Shooters.
It's higher than
human beings.
Did you see, typically, you know, you work in the food service industry, you get boxes, you break the boxes down.
Yes.
And then you put them in, a recyclable thing. For some reason, Shooters thinks that they're going to build, forts out of their box.
It is a fort.
It's a fort. They've taken all their boxes and stacked them up to, two stories.
It's probably, this is not an exaggeration, let's say Jake is 5'10".
I think Jake's 5'6".
Yeah. All right. So
I think he's pretty short.
It's like two Jakes. It's higher than two Jakes of just boxes.
They have a lot of boxes back there. So it's then revealed that there's a couple more wise guys out there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And they start fucking Jake up.
Kicking him.
Do you know how, this scene kind of hurt me because I actually put it to me, if someone kicked you as hard as they could in the back, ow.
Yeah, that's...
ow.
That's kind of you might be paralyzed.
He got kicked straight up in the back.
And then they're like, "You just don't get it, huh, Jake? And this is just a taste. You don't pay us what we're due. You're going to be getting this more and more. And next time, there's going to be a lot more damage where this came from."
And then Sydney comes out and grabs Jake "Oh, are you okay?" And then the guy's like, "Oh, hey, Sid, how you doing? Remember you? Remember you from a couple weeks ago."
Yeah, and then they're out of there.
Now we go to Billy.
Okay, Dan,
at Melrose Place.
What the F was Billy doing?
I'm not even going to say hands. Both of his arms. His full arms are in
a trash can. And I tried to figure out, what could he be doing?
Just hurtling through it. He's probably trying to find mail
or
Allison.
He's
like, "Oh, what is she doing? What is this stuff?
I'm going to look through her mail." Maybe he had a large item that he had to push down into the trash can. I've done that before. What is the explanation for two arms like that to be in the trash can?
He's sifting through. Maybe he's trying to find alcohol bottles.
So yeah, this is taking place in the courtyard area of Melrose Place. And Allison walks in, and then they start striking up a conversation. Billy apologizes for the way that he acted towards her at the lunch that day. Allison's like, "Well, thanks so much for the apology."
He's so sorry for coming down on her. And he said that they need to make a conscious effort, or otherwise it won't work. And it needs to work.
To be friends.
Yeah,
and
what?
Why? Why?
You don't. Guys, when you break up, you don't need to be friends with that person that you broke up with.
And a lot of times, it's probably best that you're not.
Yeah, that stuff's weird, especially for your other friends.
And especially if you're dating that person's best friend.
Yeah, just...
That is just... Why are they trying to make this work? The Thanksgiving dinner is brought up again. She's like, look, I don't think that's a good idea. He says, bring your friend. I really do feel like we need to try to make it work. She finally says, you know what? Fine. I'll be there.
Now we go to the hospital. And Amanda is just taking calls at Peter's desk.
Why?
Levin was a lot more busier than Peter.
Levin was like doing rounds. He was always on the floor. He had his like lab jacket on.
Levin was the Jake of shooters. You know?
He was like doing surgeries.
Yeah.
Freaking Peter just like sits in his office and like looks through his little mini kaleidoscope like, can we take down the entire city of Los Angeles?
We've only seen Peter in like a lab coat, like scrubs, like once. And that was just when he was talking with Michael. And Michael was like, hey, so you like Amanda? Did you hit it? Did you have sex? Did you like her?
Yeah.
He's like, we're not fraternity brothers. But yeah, Peter doesn't do anything at the hospital. So Amanda's taking calls at his desk. And she gets off the phone and she just looks at Peter and she's like, look, man, I can't do this. This guy's like dying and we're stealing his company.
Yeah, so she's talking about Bruce. She just got off the phone with him and she says, you know, Bruce sounds so scared. He's lost a fortune in this D&D stock. It was his retirement. It was his kids' college tuition. I just can't do this to him. I want to pull out of this.
And Peter rattles off every reason why Amanda shouldn't care. And he's like, here, I thought you ate survival of the fittest for breakfast. Amanda Woodward is having a crisis of conscience, and she's human.
But you know what, Amanda? This is the business world. And of course, we have that, like,
is it the business world?
It sounds like almost like the Michael Myers, like, it's like,
and then they sacrifice another goat and drink the blood.
It's like, this
swear to me, Amanda.
Swear to me. Pledge to me that you're going to take over D&D and become the president of a medium-sized ad agency in L.A.
Quick. Slap me on the back with my belt and tell me the three weaknesses.
Physical. Emotional.
Mental. What a fucking nut job. Oh my god. He like gets off on it, dude. He loves it. So like we leave that scene, they're like right back. They're back to normal.
And of, like, he on does board. Say before we go, it's too late to pull out, Amanda. The train is already on the tracks.
Train's already on the tracks. I've already sacrificed three lambs. You want those lambs to die in vain? He's crazy, dude. He's crazy.
Okay.
Matt and Jeffrey are hanging out at Matt's place, and Jeffrey's like, come on, Matt, you're not telling me something.
What's I gotta going on? Tell you, I don't love Matt's attitude. The last couple of episodes we've seen Matt, he gives, like, when he's got something going on, he gives, like, the person closest to them, like, the cold shoulder.
Yeah.
He is kind of, like, sloughing Jeffrey off, and Jeffrey's like, hey, you want some wine? Yeah, whatever, okay, I guess.
Yeah.
And, like, what did Jeffrey do to you? Why are you being a dick to him?
Like, come on, Matt, I'm not dead yet. What's going on?
Like, what's up with you? And that's when Matt reveals, well, I had a little visitor at work today. My dad came by, and he wants to tell our family that we're just two close friends.
And then Jeffrey's like, look, Matt, I gave up my career for my principles.
I can't do that. I can't go to your Thanksgiving dinner and just pretend to be your friend.
And they both agree that, yeah, that's not cool. and they can't do it. So that's cool. They're unified front, you know. It's fine.
Yeah, but it's like, okay, I get that. That's disappointing, and you might be mad at your dad, but why are you being a jerk to your boyfriend? He did nothing wrong to you.
You know, you like internalize it, and you don't, he's probably defensive of his parents because, like, you know, that's his camp, you know? You don't want to be talking to your boyfriend or whatever and be like, oh, yeah, by the way, my parents are fucking bigots, so...
You're going to have to lie.
Yeah, so he's probably upset about that. Like, they're not accepting of it.
Yeah.
So he probably felt bad. So we go to Joe's apartment, and she has a knock on the door, and I called it Kimberly. She shows up, and immediately I was like, this is to plan a baby thing.
Yeah, and you're totally right. So Kimberly launches into this plan where she wants to help Joe keep her baby, and she wants to essentially induce labor about a week prior to Joe's actual due date at the beach house, then deliver the baby there, and then fake that the baby was a stillborn, and then she went into labor at the beach house, and then there's so much paperwork going on at the hospital that they can fly under the radar, and then Kimberly would sign off on a death certificate, and then that's the end of it.
And tell everybody the body is cremated.
That's it. And then...
And then what?
And then Joe is free to go wherever she wants with her new baby.
Well, this plan sounds great to, like, deliver it and, like, be done. But then what happens when, like, the kid's got to go to school?
Okay, number one, Dan, does it sound great to deliver it?
No.
Because you're going to be in a beach house with one deranged person delivering your baby. And she says, you can't tell anybody, not even Michael, about this.
But she's a doctor.
So
she's
you're in the
babies.
Hands of...
I'm not worried about the procedures.
Well, because... You're not a woman that has to actually give birth to a baby without being at the comforts of a hospital.
Well, I guess you're right. But, I mean, if you have a doctor, she can get all the materials that the hospital can provide.
I don't think she can get an epidural. No.
You can't? She can't sneak an epidural? She can't sneak...
She's not an anesthetician.
I'm sure she can brush up on it.
Look.
She learned everything about delivering babies.
I know what you're getting at. That, okay.
If you're going to deliver at home, it'd be great to have a Kimberly.
Come the time when the child needs to have some documentation.
Yeah, then what?
What's going to happen when the kid grows up?
Yeah.
Where are they going to go? Where are they going to live? Joe's going to have to take on like a made up name. And I don't know. This plan has so many holes in it. Joe is very leery of it, and she says, look, let me think about it. And Kimberly says, you know what? Why don't you come over for Thanksgiving dinner, and then you can tell me your answer then.
Kimberly believes that mothers should be with their babies. And I'm with her. I'm on board if I'm Joe. What's the alternative?
The alternative do an appeal, and you keep going to court to try to get custody of your baby back.
The alternative is that she loses her baby. That's it. The second that baby's delivered, it's out of her hands and gone. So anything is better than that. I would do this. For sure. 100%. Keep your kid. You just hand it off?
No, I would continue to appeal the case and
here
say...
Here you go, ghost parents. Have fun fucking this kid up.
Have fun. Yeah. Here's Casper. Your new baby.
Your friendly ghost. You did great with Reed. He's still haunting my dreams with that fucking baby. Remember that?
Oh, how can I forget?
All right. So Sydney, she goes to the mailbox with no key and gets her mail out, and it doesn't even shut. And she's walking to her apartment, and Mr. Black pops up like Ted Ramsey from the bushes. Hey! I want to talk.
Hey, Mrs. Mancini, or is it Andrews? I just can't keep it straight. Now, you talk about someone that knows a lot about what's going on in someone's life. This Mr. Black guy knows everything.
He knows a lot about people's lives. And he knows that Sydney used to work for Lauren.
And that he figured that, she has a lot of time to kill because she's not going to Chicago for Thanksgiving. He's got a proposition for Sydney. So his boss has agreed to not coming down on Jake about paying the $1,000 per month in exchange for Sydney to provide her services, if you will, to the boss.
This is not a fair trade. $1,000 a month for the duration of Jake owning Shooters, or one night with Sydney for your boss's friend. Not even you. That's not fair.
I don't know.
I'd take the money. It'd be like Sydney like once a month. You'd have to get Sydney once a month.
There'd have to be a little bit more of one. And I don't know. Maybe there's more of a duration.
Yeah, it's weird. He's like, you just better do my boss's friend. And Sydney's like, all right, I'll do it.
Jake might have to suffer an industrial accident, like a severed arm or a leg.
You know I could do it, too.
And then Sydney's like, okay, sure, I'll do it. And then he says, oh, they don't make girlfriends like they used to. And I was kind of like,
they used to make
what does that mean? Like, the fact that she's willing to sleep with someone in order to save from her boyfriend being maimed? Or that, like, you're impressed that she would be willing to give up her, I don't even want to say chastity, but her virtue.
Doesn't make much sense.
In exchange for her boyfriend not being hurt. I don't know. I didn't get that line.
It's weird. Next day, Matt rolls up to his parents in like the worst car in the history of Melrose Place. Did you notice?
No, I didn't.
Oh, it's this blue piece of shit. It's like a Honda hatchback, like 91. Like real boxy.
Even worse than Allison's car?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, he's got a couple of pastry boxes, and he's all smiles, dropping them off to his mother. And she's like, oh, Matt, so nice to see you. Well, here you go, Mom. I said that I'd bring the desserts, and here they are. We are so early. Where's your boy? Where's Jeffrey? Mom, we're not coming, okay?
Jeffrey and I won't be able to make it. And then she's like, but what do we tell everybody else?
Tell them that I'm having dinner with my lover.
My lover.
And she's like, okay.
And he just hops in his hunk of junk and leaves. Now, it's Mr. Black and Sydney at the hotel.
So tonight's the night where Sydney needs to make good on this little arrangement.
And this is an odd request. Like, there's go fuck yourself. There's like, go walk off take a long walk off a short pier. There's like kick rocks. Sydney tells him to go hang himself. I thought that was a strange like diss.
Well, you know, I think you don't hear to the
that,
point.
You don't hear that much.
Go hang yourself.
there's go kill yourself.
I like go hang yourself, actually.
Why don't you hang yourself?
It's very specific.
It's very graphic, yeah.
Like, yeah.
You want me to take a rope, tie a knot on a strong structure, and then hang.
So she's given a key to the room. She makes her way up to this room, and I got a very True Lies vibe from this. Did you?
Oh, yeah.
You know, she's walking into
Walk slowly.
Yeah, exactly. To a very dark room. You can kind of make out the figure of a man sitting in the dark. And I think she's expected to like come in and give him a show. So she comes in and there's a voice coming, a disembodied voice coming from the dark part of the room.
And that voice is
Chris
Marchette.
Ah! Dan, did you see this coming?
No.
I didn't either.
I had no clue.
I was
clue.
Genuinely surprised. Like, my brain did not go there.
I'm surprised. I don't remember this storyline. I don't remember Chris Marchette at all from when we watched this a long time ago.
I was expecting, like, some 60-year-old, like, hey, I own Don Vito's Italian restaurant. Like, I was thinking like that. Like, there was going to be some introduction like, of like a new mob storyline.
Like Palmer Woodward.
Yeah, I don't know. I was like, my brain did not go there. So when we saw Chris, we both were like, what?
Marchette is the mob.
Yeah. Oh, thanks for coming, Sydney. I really underestimated my connections. I thought that you'd know I'd be going to Vegas all the time. And
I underestimated my connections with you, Sydney.
I've gone through a lot of trouble to organize this.
And then Sydney's like, why are you doing this?
Like, what do you want? Like, stop.
He's like, Jane lacks that slutty quality that you have in spades, Sid.
And she's like, oh, God. Like, so what do you, like, all right, you want me to have sex with you? And he's like, she's like, look, I'll talk to Jake. Like, I'll make him pay the money. Like, what, like, please just leave me alone. And he's
sit on the bed.
And he says, you can go, Sydney. But if you do, your little boyfriend is going to get real messed up.
Yeah, it's so unrecognizable. His own mother won't even know who he is.
So at that time, Sydney decides to give in. She's going to give him what he wants. And all the while, she's crying.
She looks so sad.
I know.
I just want to hug her.
It was very sad to watch.
So sad.
So we cut away, and I think we can assume that
Chris got the cookies.
Yeah.
So Allison is calling Zach on Thanksgiving Day. She's sipping what we think is just vodka on the rocks.
Straight up vodka. And yeah. She's like, Zach, hey. Like, she's surprised to get him on his phone. And she's like, Zach, you were supposed to be here 10 minutes ago. What's going on?
Oh, yeah. Just, you know, some friends came into town and we're watching the game. And I mean, why don't you, you know, go to the dinner without me?
But Zach, my friends are expecting us. I mean, you were supposed to be here and... I mean, it's Thanksgiving.
Look, what do you want me to do, kid?
Oh, man. Detroit's made a score.
Detroit just scored a touchdown. I got to go. Just tell them fuck off.
Call me when you're done.
Yeah. So now Allison has to go to this dinner she didn't want to go to alone with her ex-fiance and ex-best friend.
Yeah, this sounds like a freaking nightmare.
Yeah, so, it's like, so now let's... let's parade our love in front of Allison.
Oh, God. So she chugs the rest of her drink, picks up a bottle of wine, and heads on over to Billy's place.
And she hands the bottle of wine off. They're like, where's Zach? And she has to be like, well, he's not coming. And then they're both, like, happy.
Well, then which Susan would piss me says, off, too. Okay, well, that's good because it'll give us a chance to talk. And Allison's like, talk about what?
Yeah, what do you have
what,
to tell me?
What, Susan? What do you want to talk about?
You going to send me a bill for those pots that I fucked up the other day or what? What's going on?
Yeah, and so they're like, we really care about you, Allison, and we just want you to be happy. And then, of course, Billy jumps in with, yeah, ever since you started dating that Zach, you've completely changed who you are.
Zach's bad news. Billy, you act like her dad. Leave her alone. Leave her.
You have, like, honestly, I get it, Billy. When you guys broke up, it was probably really difficult for you. You know, you're supposed to get married, but then you decided to break up. You're done. So make it be done. Why are you still meddling in her life and wanting to be her friend and then dating her best friend from college? It's just bizarre.
And then acting so, like, you're so much better than her. That doesn't help. Like, you're so condescending. Guy, if your friend is going through something that you clearly know is, like, bad for them, you don't want to approach them like, from a place of above them.
Yeah, and belittling them and being like, you're doing all the wrong stuff.
Yeah,
one responds to that.
If you really want to connect with Allison, maybe you should, like, have a drink with her, like, not with Susan. Like, go to the bar with her.
Yeah.
And talk about it like that.
It's just stupid. And then that's when Allison kind of blows up, and she's like, who the hell are you? You just can't take the fact that I am with a guy who's crazy about me and that I don't care about your stupid little relationship. Like, yeah. Let me be.
Yeah, let me fly. And she's like, I hope you two are very happy in your little neurotic little love fest. And then she storms out. Billy tries to grab her. And she's like, get your hands off me, man.
And then Billy says, I should have known we couldn't have a conversation. You were drunk when you walked in.
It's like, no, motherfucker, that's not it. Like, I would say the same shit to you.
If I was sober, yeah. You would get the same speech.
And where's
you
the guys, food? That's what I would have been like, where's the food?
Well, fucking Susan probably made like the foie gras.
Parfait. Blah, 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 blah.
I am with Billy there. It's like, just give me my freaking sweet potatoes and my green bean casserole, okay?
Yeah, man.
That's all I want.
So we go to the beach house to the other weird Thanksgiving. Not a single turkey in this episode, by the way, guys.
Yeah, you know, I'm
They really skimped out on the food this year.
I'm kind of
Last
mad.
Last year we had a whore Thanksgiving. Remember that?
Yeah. Oh, Dan, I had food. I am really mad at Melrose Place for the holidays. I mean, remember Halloween?
Nothing.
All we got
was a
stupid like corn stalk on Jane's door.
This is our third Thanksgiving. First one, Matt was a slave. I had to cook Allison's food.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Second one was whore giving. Where Sydney was like, I don't have a family. And she showed up in that brown frock of a dress. And they were like, come on, open arms. Here, have all this whore turkey.
And now this one, where it's like, we don't even get the sense that it is Thanksgiving.
Not a single piece of food.
Yeah, so here we have Kimberly and Joe, and they're kind of talking on the back patio, looking over the ocean, and Joe goes into this whole thing about how she was reading up about how mothers can, like, do anything, whatever it takes to save their children. And
superhero mom stories.
Yeah, so, like, I heard one woman picked up a car to save her child, or another woman died while trying to save her child from quicksand, which I was like, where is that?
Yeah, where?
Where did that take place?
Sort of unrelated, but kind of. I saw this meme the other day that was like, when I was a kid, I thought quicksand was going to be a way bigger deal. Just because of all, like, the movies and TV.
What do you mean?
Like, it was so mean. Because, like, when you're a kid, in the 80s and 90s, like, everything was like, it's quicksand! And, like, so many people were dying in quicksand.
That you thought it was, like, oh,
more
my
of
God.
An occurrence. Like, you better watch out.
But
there's
you know
quicksand
what?
Places.
Kind of like sinkholes.
Yeah,
like,
true.
Do you think that's kind of like quicksand?
Hmm. Sinkholes just sort of like happen. Quicksand is there.
It's there. Okay, yeah.
And if you get in there, you're fucked.
I mean, remember in the, what's that effing? We just watched that movie.
Never Ending Story.
Yeah, Neverending Story where the horse goes down in the quicksand.
Artax!
Yeah.
And I stand by my stance there. It's not Artax's fault.
Who is Atreyu?
Atreyu's the boy.
No, that's Sebastian. Wait, no, Atreyu's the...
Atreyu led him down the trail.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then through a swamp, and then Artax is like, guy, dude, fuck you. Why are we walking? Why are we taking this route?
And I am dying now.
Yeah, there's a ton of other routes. And he got depressed and was like, I'd rather die.
That's right.
Than have you pull me through this
that's
thing.
That's the thing about that. If you get that down in the dumps, it just like, takes you.
It's like the swamp of sadness or something like that.
That's true.
Anyway.
Okay.
But still, yeah, like you thought that as a kid, you thought like quicksand would be more of a thing when you're an adult. Like to look out for it. Sharks, quicksand.
So she says, you know what? Kimberly, my baby's in danger, and I need you to save it.
And then Kimberly's like, I'm your last hope, Joe.
So they're in.
Let's do this.
They are going to deliver that baby at the beach house and fake the death.
And then Michael is not going to know. Let me explain to you. A child is going to be delivered at your house. and you're not going to know. What if he came home and Joe's just pushing like in his fucking living room? I would come home and be like, what the fuck is going
Kimberly
on here?
Would do the old get in the car in the garage trick.
Yeah.
Put the exhaust on.
Jesus Christ, man. That's a little more than like, we're going to have a party here and not tell anybody.
Yeah. So we've got the final scene of the episode.
Yes.
Allison is in her new car. She's on her car phone talking to what we can assume is Zach.
And Zach's saying mean shit to her.
She's like,
without hearing the other side of the conversation,
it's like we can really glean that he's saying stuff like, drive around for an hour until my friends leave and then you can come over on Thanksgiving Day.
You're getting used.
Yeah,
girl.
And she's like, I'm not gonna drive around. And it's evident that she's drunk. She's driving. She's coming up on a stop sign, but she's not slowing down. And she keeps going and going. And then we see what looks like a little boy on a bike.
Bling, bling.
But then when she hits the bike, it's obviously a large man that is being thrown across the windshield. And then we get another shot of this person that's been hit. And it's a little boy again laying on...
Is that bad? I didn't notice it.
Oh, I noticed it. We should...
It was like Stuntman afterwards.
Yeah, we should run that back. And so, of course, we get her, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God,
oh, my God,
oh, God, oh, God.
Oh, God.
And the kid is not responsive, just laying on the pavement.
And we get the credit.
So we don't know. Is the kid dead or alive? What's up with that?
Time will tell.
Thanksgiving. And what the... Why is a little child riding his bike in the dark? Like, it's got to be in the very late in the evening.
Maybe he's trying to work off Thanksgiving dinner.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So, Dan, to recap what happened.
Matt turns down Thanksgiving at his parents' house.
D&D stock is falling and Bruce is feeling the pressure.
Peter and Amanda buy a massive stake in D&D.
Kimberly hatches a plan with Joe to deliver her baby and pretend it died.
Jake gets beat up by the mob because they won't give him $1,000 a month.
Chris tricks Sydney into having sex with him finally.
Michael and Kimberly rule out adoption because it's just too expensive.
And Allison's drinking is getting out of control, which results in her hitting a child on a bike in her car.
Did you already say Joe and Joe agrees to have a baby?
Yes.
At the beach house?
Yep.
All right. I think that's all I got. 90s moments. There were a couple. I got Jane's scrunchie at the beginning.
An actual alarm clock.
Ooh. The tin trash can that Billy's digging through.
$40,000 in debt for medical school.
That's it.
Wow. That's like an undergrad today.
Call that a semester.
Yeah. I have Zach's rings. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah. Zach's got a lot of rings. Peter's pinstripes on all his clothes.
Yeah, that was a good one. Of course, Allison's car phone.
Matt's car.
Sydney's wide leg jeans.
Ooh. I think that's it.
And then who? I think it's Matt that had those black plates. We saw somebody's table set,
mm-hmm.
and all of the all of the table settings were black. Black plate. It was very like, it reminded me a lot of Beetlejuice.
Huh.
Like that modern art.
All right.
90s.
Zach calling D&D by heart.
Yep. That's another good one. So Dan, what lesson did you learn from this episode?
My lesson, guys, is if the mob wants $1,000 a month, you break them off $1,000 a month. Then your girlfriend doesn't have to have sex with her sister's fiance. And then you don't get kicked in the back when you're taking out the garbage.
You know what, Dan? It's funny because I have the exact opposite advice.
Don't give $1,000.
Just call the cops. If someone comes into your place of business and demands that you pay them $1,000 for, quote, protection, unquote.
Pay them.
No, your first move is, hello, police. There's some guy coming in here demanding money of me. And then if you don't do it then, definitely do it when they attack you outside.
They already got the cops under their belt. If they're coming in there saying, give me $1,000, you think they haven't already paid off the cops?
Okay, this isn't New York in like 1971. No.
This is LA
in 96. You call the cops.
94.
Oh, whenever this was.
All right. And now it's time for
Bitch of the Week. I'm a boss ass bitch. Bitch, 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 bitch. I'm a boss ass bitch.
Last week, bitch, guys, bitch, bitch, bitch. I said Allison was the bitch. And Jenny, you said Amanda was the bitch. Now on Twitter, the vote was 5-1 for Amanda. And Facebook, our Facebook group, it was 17-9.
What?
For Allison. So, 14-19. Allison is bitch of the week. I'm on a winning streak.
Daniel, congratulations.
Thank you. Finally.
I am happy for you.
Finally, my dry spell is over.
So let's see what our friends had to say about our nominations.
Go for it.
Justin says, the ultimate showdown. This one will be interesting to watch. 7 minutes in and it's already tied 1-1. And then he actually posted a photo of the TV guide, Melrose Face Off. Amanda and Allison, a new dynasty dukes it out. And we also have a little like pop-in of Fabio. Someone had dinner with him.
Donald said, this was a difficult decision. I hesitated voting for Allison. Courtney Smith's performance in this episode, which is, in my opinion, Emmy-worthy. But I had to vote for her because of what she did to Joe. You just don't do that.
Especially a friend who is like, oh, please be my godmother of my child. I didn't vote for Amanda because I don't think she's being Peter's puppet. I think she always wanted to take over D&D, and she was just maybe afraid to try to do it herself. I don't remember exactly what happens with this, but I just felt that Allison deserved it more because of what she said to Joe. Honorable mention, in my opinion, is Billy because he was acting like a douchebag in this episode, thinking he's all that because him and Susan are together. But I'm so excited. I can't wait for next week. And you know what, Donald? I have to agree with you that Courtney Thorne Smith does a great drunk. She is so good at playing drunk. And it's hard to do.
Yeah, she's really good.
I mean, in my limited, did a little acting in college, Dan and I. But that's tough to do convincingly. And I think she's got it. She's good.
Zach says, as Amanda's fiercest defender, I have to say I almost voted for her. I can't tolerate her letting Peter manipulate her this easily. And like, come on, girl. Can't you hear the danger music? But really, Allison literally had one job to do this episode, and she done fucked up. Allison, stop ruining your life over Billy, because he's the bitch here, and you're letting yourself get nominated in his place.
Good point. Michael also says, as Amanda's other fiercest defender, I'd say fiercer, but really are so few that I wouldn't dream of turning a rare potential ally into an adversary based on sheer insecure cattiness. So funny. That's so much more Allison style, if you ask me. Anyway, well, Jenny, you made some undeniable points about Amanda allowing herself to be puppeteered by Peter and seeming to give him the reins of control in their little power play. I see it a bit differently. I think Peter is a catalyst to awaken her more ruthless, take-no-prisoner side. Amanda has never felt appreciated, supported, or treated fairly by Bruce. Now, all of a sudden, he's relying on her to keep things afloat at the office? Meanwhile, when and if he recovers, she'll be right back to being undermined and shown barely a modicum of gratitude for her loyalty, which up until now has been unwavering. All's fair in the corporate shark tank that is D&D advertising. Maybe Bruce should have shown Amanda some respect instead of just expecting her to fall in line with whatever he says goes. Meanwhile, I love drunk Allison. Oh, you and me both, baby. But seriously, get a grip. As Dan said, Allison's life is seriously just slipping away. She's got no real support system to lean on, just an enabler who helped her make even more of a mess of her poor pregnant Joe, who just entrusted her with this huge responsibility of being a godmother. And really, calling Amanda loose? Cheap shot and way off base in this case. By this point in time, taking into consideration sex and simply lusting after, I count 6-3 with Little Miss Party Girl in the lead for who with who's looser. Seriously? Billy, Keith, almost Steve lusted after, and her doctor, Mitch. That's right. We forgot about Mitch.
Mm-hmm.
Zach, and let's not even get into who she hurt by her promiscuous proclivities. Amanda has been in long-term relationships with Billy, Jake, and now Peter. Really, I'd once again opt to give the title to Billy Smugass, but that is Allison versus Amanda, and Allison, you're the bitch of the week. Wow, Michael. Whoa. That was a lot. And you know what? I think we are somewhat, I would say I'm a first-time watcher. I do not recall anything beyond this. I think maybe we watched the first two seasons and maybe a little bit into season three. But
you don't think we got this far?
I do not recall any of it. This is uncharted territory.
There's still stuff in my head that hasn't happened yet.
Well, okay. Well, maybe you've seen it a little bit more with your sister. But I just feel like you might know where Amanda goes from here. But as someone who hasn't seen it, it's kind of shocking to see her being like, sure, take the reins, do whatever. And maybe it's because you know her true colors. But we'll see. I'm really excited for future episodes.
Kevin says, this was a very tough decision. I voted for Amanda because I really don't like her being the bizarre Dr. Peter Burns' bitch. But was so close to voting for Allison. How could she do that to her BFF, Joe? Although now that I think of it, she kind of did treat Joe like shit when she was her maid of honor still.
It's true!
Still, I just love Allison in these episodes, and I can't bring myself to vote for that poor, pathetic mess. But what Amanda did to Bruce makes her an awful human. Really, what it comes down to is this. They're both pretty awful bitches this week. But I like Allison better in her storyline than Amanda in hers. So Amanda takes the bitch crown for me.
Yay! Niall says Amanda has a real amateur bitch moment here as she is basically following doctor's orders. Allison is a true bitch because she is messing things up for Joe and she does that on her own. Also, applause for Allison for keeping children out of Melrose Place. Before you know, you are being waken up by yelling toddlers the whole time. I'm with Allison. Good point.
Eric says, has to be Allison. First, she tells a mediocre story at the party about her drinking a lot that people found amusing because it was the pre-mainstream internet 90s and they had less entertainment to choose from. Then she misses Joe's trial and prevents us from seeing how the Carter's lawyer will use pictures of Allison's season 2 haircut to show how Melrose Place is unsafe for babies and the innocent.
Okay, Charles says, 100% Allison. Her drunken hag antics reached new heights when she failed to honor her commitment to Joe. Granted, Joe's fate may have already been sealed by every other tenant's testimony, and the Carter's lawyer would have found something to grill Allison with on that stand, but Joe pinned a lot of hopes on Allison, and look what an epic fail it turned into. In my opinion, Amanda wasn't the real bitch of the week contender in this scenario. It was Peter in some crouching doctor hidden bitch scenario. Even if Peter was in the running, I still would have went Allison, though.
Sherry says, I'm going with Dan on this one. Allison is 100% the bitch of the week. She's becoming a drunken woman with an attitude, watching Billy and Susan and getting upset by drinking a lot and becoming a different person lately. The fact that she had to let Joe down, showing up to court high as a kite and making Joe look bad to the Carters, and sealing Joe's fate of possibly losing custody of her baby and making it look like Joe is hanging around bad company in the judge's eyes in court is a real bitchy move. Allison knew how important this was for Joe and really made Joe look at her as if Allison did not take care at all about Joe's situation. It's a bitch move. Allison's a selfish, awful friend who really needs to go to rehab or AA for help with her drinking problem. So I vote for her to be bitch of the week for sure. Also, I want to let Jenny and Dan know that the original song heard at the beginning of this episode is called Precious, sung by Annie Lennox. And the original song heard playing at the D&D party when Bruce was mad at Amanda was the song Hit by Higher Love by CeCe Peniston.
So it wasn't, I see you walking there, hands in the air saying, hey girl.
La, is this la, the la. Song, Hit by a Higher Love?
No, that's Bring Me a Higher Love. I'm not familiar with this one.
And the original song heard in the scene of the episode where drunk Allison meets Zach Phillips at the bar is the song Here and Now, sung by Letters to Cleo. And the original song heard in the scene where Bruce is dancing fast and has a heart attack is another song by Annie Lennox. I just can't seem to find out the name of that song, but I know that's her voice. Anyway, just a tidbit I thought you guys would want to know.
Thanks, Sherry. What if it was walking on, broken glass?
Oh, boy.
It's just like...
So there you have it.
Wow, so much feedback. You guys have a lot to say about these characters. I love that you're so invested in their storylines. And you bring up a lot of great points that I hadn't considered.
So this week, I'm going with Billy Campbell.
Ooh.
Just for the sheer reason that he is so condescending to Allison. And then he's betting with Amanda that she bought her car the night before and, like, just calling her out at work. Like, what are you trying to do? You trying to get her fired? Is that your goal? Like, why would you say that in front of your fucking boss, dude? That's a fucking really bitchy. And you sound like a narc. Like, oh, well, look at her. Look at her. Hey, Amanda, check her out.
In front of her.
In front of her.
Yeah.
I bet she's drunk right now. Let's give her a breathalyzer. Billy, you piece of shit, man. You're already dating her best friend. Now you want to parade that around her and invite her to Thanksgiving? Then you're digging through her trash. Like, what are you looking for, bro? What are you looking for? I don't know. Like, just leave her alone. She's not your problem anymore. You broke up with her at the end of the day. She wanted to work it out and you said no. It's a wrap. You've already dated like two other girls after her. You know? It's like, dude, just get over it. Stop being a bitch. Stop trying to make her life a living hell and quit trying to tell her how to lead hers, you know? Especially like even the other episode where she's swimming in the pool, he's like just looming over her like she's a terrible person. It wasn't that long ago, Billy. when you had all that credit card debt and you sucked, and when you got a shitty cab and you got your ass kicked. You're just a total bitch, man. That's all I got to say.
Okay. That's a compelling argument, but in my opinion, Zach is totally the 100% bitch of this episode. First, we already talked about this, but the rings. Who wears those kinds of rings, guys? Those rings on a man are just plain weird. Secondly, he is a horrible influence on Allison. Now, you know, I think that you need that friend in your life that's like, live a little. You know what? Go ahead. Let's get the bottle of champagne. Let's call off work one day. Let's live a little. I mean, okay, I get that. Let's live a little bit of the time. But this guy wants to take that mentality and apply it to 100% of your life. And really, it's making a lot of problems for Allison. When they're in Santa Barbara and he's like, hey, go throw a log in that fire because this is going to be a long night. She gets up, throws a freaking log on the fire. And guys, I don't know anything about starting a fire. I don't know anything about putting a fire out. If someone said throw a log on a fire, I would be like, okay, and like haphazardly throw it into the fireplace. She turns around. Seconds later, he's passed out. Okay, now what does she have to do about the fire? Does she have to put it out in some way? That's kind of messed up that you're like, do that, and then you're totally incoherent. Then agreeing to go to Thanksgiving dinner and then not showing up. Need I remind you guys that she called him 10 minutes after he was supposed to be there. So that leads me to believe that he wasn't even going to call. He was going to be a no-show, no-call to Thanksgiving dinner. This isn't like, come to my place for dinner on Friday. This is Thanksgiving dinner. Not even a call. And then he's so cavalier about it and is like, who cares? I have my friends over. We're watching a game. Come over tomorrow. I gotta go. I can't even like talk to you about this because they're making a play here. And then lastly, as she's trying to go to his house to hang out with her boyfriend on Thanksgiving, he tells her to drive around for an hour until his friends leave. Okay? All of these things are a culmination of the bitch of this week, hands down, Zach, Mind Freak, Chris Angel.
Flavor Saver.
The bitch.
All right, Facebook. Our Facebook group, you can vote there, and you can vote on Twitter at Melrose Pod on Tuesday when I post the poll for sure.
Okay.
So, all of these episodes have a terrible title. This one is The Days of Wine and Vodka. We can do better, Jenny. What are you renaming this thing?
I'm renaming this Playing Hooky because Allison's playing hooky from work and Sydney's playing hooky to, to save Jake.
All right. Two different kinds of hookies, but okay. I'm calling this Indecent Proposals.
Oh, nice.
Because Kimberly is indecently proposing to deliver a baby at her house with warm water and towels. Mr. Black is proposing that Jake pay him $1,000. And Chris Marchette is proposing that Sydney have sex with him.
And Allison and, sorry, Billy and Susan are proposing that freaking Allison needs to come hang out with them on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
What?
So that's that. Indecent Proposals.
Good stuff.
Predictions. What do you think is going to happen?
Okay, Kimberly is definitely going to steal Joe's baby.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be like a point where she delivers the baby. Joe, you need to recover. Go to sleep. Joe wakes up. She's like in a back alley somewhere. And then all of a sudden, Kimberly has a baby. And Joe's like, that's my baby. I don't know what you're talking about. She's going to do that whole thing that she did with the cops with Sydney, where she gives them a completely different story. Well, you see, officer, my husband and I, Michael Mancini, we're blah, blah, blah.
Like, she's going to make her sign like adoption papers fucking under like drugs.
No. I think that she's going to completely be like, I had nothing to do with Joe giving birth at all. This is my baby.
And then Michael's going to come home and be like, what the fuck?
I think that's definitely going to happen. I think somehow Jane is going to find out that Sydney and Chris slept together. But then Chris is going to kind of weave it in a way where it's like, she seduced me. And it's going to be like,
she seduced me, Jane.
Yeah, it's going to be some like terrible thing. And then Jane's going to get the wrong idea about Sydney again. And it's going to be like yet another battle royale between the sisters. I think that Peter might still try to kill Bruce. I think that like he's still on that path, and I think that Allison and Zach are going to work together to cover up the car accident, and it's going to be a hit and run.
Ooh, I think this is the straw that broke Allison's drunk back. I think that she's going to get arrested.
Oh, okay.
I think she's going to miss work. I think she's going to get fired. And then I think she's going to dump what's his face?
Mind you know? Freak.
Yeah. Zach. I think Bruce is definitely going to die. Not sure how. Yes. Yes, Kimberly is stealing that baby. It's hard to say still about Matt and Jeffrey. Maybe the parents are the wedge that breaks them up. And Jeffrey's just like, I can't be with someone.
No, I think Jeffrey is going to be in this until he dies of AIDS.
Ouch.
I really think it's going to be like, I took a turn.
Really?
I think that it's going to be like this heart-wrenching, like, season 3 finale in, like, the show's timeline within, like, a span of, like, 7 weeks.
Mm.
It's going to, like, take a turn for the worse.
I think Sydney's going to somehow get out of having sex with Chris, and that's going to hurt Shooters. Like Shooters is going to get fucked up. Maybe that happens.
Well, we'll have to watch next week.
Yeah. So, last week, it was brought to our attention that we missed a guest star. We missed John Saxon. He played Henry Waxman.
John Saxman played Henry Waxman.
Yeah, Joe's attorney, and he is known for his work on Nightmare on Elm Street. He plays Lieutenant Thompson.
And I love how Shayna's like, I think he's so hot.
Yeah, Shayna, what the fuck? That guy's not hot.
Oh,
man.
Shayna, I love you.
He is not hot. Yeah, what else happened? Anything else go down?
Oh, so much goes down in that group, guys. Sorry, I was looking up our... seeing if we had a review.
Charles said, for me, a big 90s moment in Injustice for None was Michael's attitude regarding Jeff's HIV status. Yes, at the time, that was the prevailing attitude about becoming involved with an HIV positive person. But in 2018, persons with HIV are living longer and fuller lives due to medical advances. It's not, it really is not the death sentence it once was. Yeah, that's a good thing.
Yeah, agreed. Eric also talked about the idea of Melrose Place and the description of the show on Hulu is something along the lines of, quote, it's a bunch of trendy 20-somethings going out into the real world and having fun trying to make it, end quote. But by season 3, it's more like, quote, a bunch of doctors, advertising executives, a hospital social services bureaucrat, a bar owner, and a design business owner spend a lot of time at work and then mostly date people who either live in their apartment complex or are a coworker. Oh, and then go to one bar that their friend owns. Very true.
After you were so mesmerized by Zach's dreamy eyes, I posted a picture of Zach in our group and was like, is he creepy or is he cute? There was one person who said that Zach was cute. And it's you, Jenny. Everyone else says creepy as fuck.
Okay, well,
Stephanie said he looks like Satan personified. If the devil himself were to morph into a human, it would be this guy. I wouldn't say he's totally evil, but he's very narcissistic and selfish and is only about the party.
Okay, well, you know, you guys have your opinions. I have mine.
Zach said he sucks.
Okay, I get it.
I'm not impressed that they wasted the good name of Zach on this douchebag.
Okay, another thing I wanted to bring up, Anna, who is new to our group, she said before that she found our group, so I don't know if she's that new, she would post about funny things from Melrose Place, and she has this meme of Amanda, and it says, Jake, I'm breaking up with you because it's been a week, and you still can't cope with almost dying when my dad blew up on your yacht. Also, you're evicted from Melrose Place and won't get your deposit back.
correction.
Perfect.
Gregory also said he's cute.
Oh, thank you, Gregory.
Yeah.
Okay. There's one person that's with me.
Justin posted a bunch of cool covers. Melrose Place TV guide covers. And yeah, man, just stay active in this group, man. It's so fun. And like I said in the group, guys, we're not perfect. We miss things all the time. If you think we should have said, made mention of something, let us know, and we'll bring it up in the next episode for show.
That we will.
For show. We got a new Patreon contributor.
Woo! What up?
Daniel T. Great name, by the way.
Great name.
Daniel is a fantastic name. It should be given to every
young lad,
young gentleman.
But you know what?
We appreciate it, man.
That donation goes a long way. Guys, we're an independent podcast. All the equipment is, we foot the bill for it all. Mm-hmm. And of course, we are young parents that, well, I won't say young.
And it's 1:30 a.m. right now.
Yeah, we do all of this. We both have full-time jobs, and we do all of this in the wee hours of the morning. So anything helps, and it really assists us with our expenses to produce the podcast and just keeps us going.
That's
so
right.
Thank you.
Thank you guys so much. So we're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram, @MelrosePod. You can email us anytime you like. MelrosePod@gmail.com. You can donate to the podcast, patreon.com/MelrosePod.
Well, guys, we love smut.
And we love you. Boop, boop, be doop.